From the syphilis capital of the world, ladies and gentlemen, it is Cardiology Corner!
With your host,
Dr.
Amol Mattu.
In July of this year, the ACC, the American College of Cardiology, released their algorithm on managing patients post-cardiac arrest. We had an update on post-cardiac arrest targeted temperature management last month. No need to rehash that. But what about the other stuff? We had a short on this in July, and now it's time to take a closer look. This was from the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, published online July 7th, titled Cardiac Arrest, a Treatment Algorithm for Emergent Invasive Cardiac Procedures in the Resuscitated Comatose Patient. Amol, one concept introduced in this article is the idea of risk stratification in post-out-of-hospital cardiac arrest patients. Chest pain, sure. Risk stratification, we talk about that all the time. But cardiac arrest, what does risk stratification even mean in this setting?
I appreciate you using the term risk stratification because we're starting to realize more and more that just like every other aspect of emergency medicine, we need to risk stratify these patients that are post-arrest and specifically risk stratify them for who is going to be best treated in the cath lab. Now, the first thing I have to say is that sending your post-arrest patients to the cath lab is not a magical cure. You know, I've kind of assumed that when you send patients to the cath lab, everything's going to be fine.
Hey, don't worry about it. We'll let the cath lab take care of it.
What is that?
Oh, that's the cath lab. He comes as a dog. He takes the patient. He pulls it away. And then it gets taken care of. See? Cath lab. Yeah, boy. It's like magic. Good boy, cath lab.
Exactly. Is it what happens up there? Isn't it magic?
Well, number one, they're out of your ER, so that's got to be something good.
Magic in and of itself.
But again, remember that when you send somebody to the cath lab, only one thing, for all practical purposes, only one thing is going to be done, and that is to look for a coronary occlusion and try to open it. Every other aspect of resuscitation is going to be pushed to the side. So if it turns out the patient has sepsis, they're not being resuscitated for sepsis. If it turns out the patient's got a PE, they're not getting treated for PE. Same thing for dissection. They're not being treated for their metabolic abnormalities. And so just keep in mind that when you send someone to the cath lab, there's not a team of critical care specialists or resuscitationists that are working on that patient. There are cardiologists up there that are trying specifically to open a vessel. So I think that's why risk stratification is really important, because if there's concerns that this is not a primary cardiac event, you may actually be harming the patient by sending them for a cath. And while they're up there for an hour or however long it takes, no other type of resuscitation in reality is probably happening. In terms of risk stratification, I think there's three really important questions that need to be addressed whenever you're thinking about a cath.
One,
does the initial rhythm matter?
Two,
does the post-arrest EKG matter? In other words, STEMI versus non-STEMI.
Three,
does the mental status matter?
The cath lab can be a dangerous place. We, well, or at least I, am not going to be so presumptuous as to include your thinking in this, think or thought that the cath lab's like this fairy kingdom where everything will be made right. Well, it's not. It can answer a specific question. Is there a blocked artery? And maybe if there is, it can be opened up and the patient may do better. But if the patient's arrest is not from a blocked vessel, then all we're doing is potentially putting the patient at increased risk. It would be nice if there was a way to figure out which patients would benefit. That's what this algorithm is trying to address. So you've got your post-arrest patient. What are the ingredients to risk stratification? Initial rhythm, post-arrest EKG, and post-arrest mental status. And just to clarify, the question isn't what's their post-arrest mental status, it's does post-arrest mental status matter? So the first part, initial post-arrest rhythm. Patient is lying there on the sidewalk, they've just had a cardiac arrest, EMS pops on the monitor and sees rhythm X. Does that rhythm, the first one we see, give a hint as to whether or not the patient should go to cath?
If the initial post-arrest rhythm was V-fib, it is a very good predictor that the patient had a primary cardiac event. And that means that sending them to the cath lab is probably a pretty good idea. If the initial rhythm, however, was PEA or asystole, in other words, a non-shockable rhythm, then you really don't know for sure whether it was a primary cardiac event or something completely different, an overdose or a PE or dissection or sepsis or something else. So the initial rhythm does make a difference. About 50% of the time, a primary cardiac event, say an MI, will produce PEA or asystole. But the good news here is that the majority of the time, if you see VFib, then it's probably an MI, primary cardiac event, and sending them to the cath lab is going to be a good thing. Question number two, does the post-arrest EKG matter? In other words, if the post-arrest EKG is STEMI versus non-STEMI, how does that make a difference? And what the literature has seemed to say is that if the post-arrest EKG shows STEMI, that's a really good predictor that the patient had a primary cardiac event. Go ahead and send them to the cath lab. And the 2013 STEMI guidelines from the ACC/AHA support that. If the post-arrest EKG shows STEMI, then it's a class one intervention, send them to the cath lab. But what if the post-arrest EKG shows non-STEMI? Well, once again, it's kind of a wash. The post-arrest EKG is not always a great predictor of whether it's a primary cardiac event or non-cardiac event if it's a non-STEMI. And what the literature says is that if the first EKG you get after you get the pulses back shows a non-ST elevation ACS, then there's probably only about a 33% chance that there is a culprit vessel involved. You know, 33% is still pretty good and probably still justifies sending that patient for a cath, but not a slam dunk the way we generally consider a post-arrest STEMI.
Kind of a change of thinking for me as far as that post-arrest rhythm in the field, if that makes a difference if a patient goes to the cath lab, because I used to think that whatever happened in the field didn't matter. As long as they had a perfusing rhythm when they got to me, then I would just kind of start over. I'd do the EKG and I would decide from there. So that actually changes my thinking significantly.
The post-arrest rhythm in the field is more important than the rhythm than when they arrive in the emergency department, probably because it is a better predictor of what the inciting event was.
Inconceivable.
I love it. Got to throw some Princess Bride in here. The third question is, does the mental status matter? And for years and years, if somebody was post-arrest and in a comatose state, we always assume that, you know, they've got no chance. But there's more and more literature showing that actually, regardless of the neurologic status, cath will improve their outcome. So even in the post-arrest comatose patient, don't avoid sending the patient to cath just because the patient is comatose. They still oftentimes will have a better outcome if they go for cath, provided you meet some of the conditions that we're about to talk about. And the one other caveat that I've got to throw in here, when you resuscitate a patient who has gotten shocks or epi, shocks and epi by themselves can induce huge ST segment changes, including ST segment elevation. And generally, the post-epi ST changes and the post-shock ST changes can last about 10 to 15 minutes. I'll tell you what I do. After getting a patient back, you get a quick 12-lead EKG, and if there's ST segment elevation, I think it's pretty unreliable because it might just be the result of epi. What I do is I repeat the EKG at least 10 to 15 minutes after the last dose of epi was given, and that's the EKG that I rely on.
I'm going to tell you, Amal, I do the exact opposite of what you're saying. I get an EKG 8 milliseconds after the patient gets their perfusing rhythm back. It shows STEMI, and I'm going to call any cardiologist who has a phone and has had a cath fellowship. Done. I'm just saying, I realize that there are these mitigating factors, ST elevation, but I do not want to dilly-dally and fiddle around with that ST elevation saying, maybe it's the post-shock, maybe it's the epi. My work here is done.
Fair enough. I understand where you're coming from, and it is very tempting to do that. But again, remember that if you do send a patient to the cath lab who doesn't have a primary cardiac event, you may be doing them a disservice. You can send them based on that initial EKG, or you can repeat that 12-lead after 10, 15 minutes or so, and then go based on that. My preference is to go based on the EKG that's done about 10 to 15 minutes after the last dose of epi. And you know what? Things happen so fast in the emergency department anyway that probably 10 to 15 minutes in the emergency department goes by in a heartbeat.
Initial rhythm VFib suggests primary cardiac event. Asystole and PEA suggests against primary cardiac event, although you certainly still have one. EKG shows STEMI. Well, that suggests a STEMI. Not always, but suggests a STEMI. Off to the cath lab. but no STEMI, then what? Then what, I ask? This is why I came to the party, to get this answer. About a third will have a blocked vessel. Even comatose post-arrest patients can go to the cath lab. So a patient has an out-of-hospital cardiac arrest with return of spontaneous circulation. The algorithm says get an EKG within 10 minutes. Hopefully, you can also sort out what their post-arrest rhythm was from the paramedics in case that comes into play. EKG shows STEMI. Activate the cath team if you have one. There's mitigating factors that portend a bad outcome that may preclude cath, even in STEMI patients, but as far as a binary decision goes, get the cath ball rolling. If there's no STEMI, of course, this is where the controversy is, because...
How do you know for sure that the patient was a non-ST elevation ACS? Maybe it's a non-ST elevation PE or sepsis or overdose or something else like that. And that's where the risk stratification comes into play. You look at the initial rhythm. And what this paper also says is that if the initial rhythm is ventricular fibrillation in the field or in the ED, then that is a pretty good predictor that that patient's inciting event for the cardiac arrest was probably a primary cardiac event, and that they are better off going to the cath lab. One other thing that they threw out there is that if there was any evidence or history of chest pain before the cardiac arrest, that tends to be a pretty good predictor. And unfortunately, we often don't have that type of history.
So it sounds like it comes down to STEMI, done deal. No STEMI. If they had VFib, go to cath lab. If it wasn't VFib, don't go to cath lab. If they had chest pain, you get that history, go to cath lab.
Now, there are a handful of what they call unfavorable resuscitation features. In other words, if a patient has any one of these 10 conditions, then you probably ought to think twice before saying that they're ready to go for cath. Maybe they need a little more resuscitation before they go to cath. But the bottom line is that what this paper says is these are things that you need to discuss with cardiology. So you call cardiology, you discuss it with them, you consult with them, and there should be no argument from their end about the fact that you're picking up the phone at 2 o'clock in the morning and discussing this with them because you're following this algorithm that's in the paper. And what are those unfavorable resuscitation features? A lot of this is common sense. If the patient had an unwitnessed arrest, that's a negative prognostic factor. If the initial rhythm was not VFib, if there is no bystander CPR, if there was more than 30 minutes before the patient had return of spontaneous circulation, if the patient has ongoing CPR, well, that's not a resuscitation yet. If the pH is less than 7.2, if you happen to get a quick pH, if you happen to have a lactate and it's greater than 7, if the age is over 85, if the patient has end-stage renal disease, and also if there's evidence of a non-cardiac cause, for example, a traumatic arrest. Those are all considered negative prognostic features that portend a really bad prognosis. And they're not saying that you don't send those patients to cath, but those are the kind of things that you're going to discuss with your cardiologist, and it would be reasonable to just do more resuscitation and discuss a little bit more before sending a patient like that for cath.
Hey, there it is. What do you do with the non-STEMI patient, the one without ST elevation on EKG? You assess for unfavorable prognostic features. You're not going to remember all 10 that Amal just listed. Just check the show notes or look at the algorithm. Consult with cardiology and intensive care. There's going to be gray area here, not definite answers. You and I both know that there are cardiologists who will take pretty much anyone to cath and others who have a much more measured approach. It needs to be noted that these unfavorable features that we're talking about for the non-STEMI patient also apply to the STEMI patient, because a STEMI patient with an unwitnessed arrest, non-VFib initial rhythm, no bystander CPR, over 30 minutes to ROSC, pH under 7.2, lactate over 7, age over 85, end-stage renal disease, non-cardiac cause of arrest, or ongoing CPR, hey, look at that, all 10 unfavorable resuscitation features.
Woohoo! Yeah,
there you go. They are also less likely to benefit from coronary intervention, so be prepared for those things to come into the conversation. Now, let's see if we can poke some holes in this sending the non-STEMI post-arrest patient to cath idea. Well, in 2013, there was an article titled Early Cardiac Catheterization is Associated with Improved Survival in Comatose Survivors of Cardiac Arrest Without STEMI. And I think that it is some of the supporting evidence for the ideas espoused in this paper. It's had some backlash because, to quote one of your favorite movie lines, which we've already said a few times here today, I do not think that word means what you'll think it means, because the data was retrospective and it wasn't clear that it was actually cath that made a difference. It could have been the potentially more intensive and attentive care that post-cath patients received.
That one paper alone was just one of many papers that have shown that patients seem to be doing better when they go for aggressive therapy, and cath is a big part of their aggressive therapy. Post-arrest cooling is also a part of what's incorporated into these protocols, including in this paper. It's true that it's a little bit unclear for sure whether it was the cath that made the difference or it was some other thing. But now there's enough papers out there that strongly suggest that cath is an independent predictor of a better outcome. And also there's a handful of papers that have really identified that, as we mentioned earlier, even with non-ST elevation ACS, at least one third of patients have a culprit vessel occlusion. And based on that, it would seem that if you're going to help the patient, you've got to open up that occlusion. And I think that's the reason why post-arrest cath has been pushed the way it is in this paper and also in the recent guidelines.
Say you don't have a cath lab. Do you transfer the patient to a cath center, or do you stabilize in the unit and do a cath later on, send them to cath later down the road? Certainly, this is a tall order to transfer a quasi-unstable, just arrested patient.
Well, that's actually a pretty easy answer. So the answer is all right, and there you go.
Yeah, I got that. I got that. We'll clean that up in the editing. Oh, if you could repeat yourself, that would be lovely, Amal.
Yeah. So what are you going to do? I'm not going to say it again, Rob. I mean, you got to pay attention. So, all right. No, that's a great question. There just is, unfortunately, there's no good answer. In fact, you know, I have to say, I just recently reviewed a paper that was submitted for publication in which that very question was posed. And in going through all of the literature, the world's literature on this topic, we have no randomized studies that have come out saying whether taking the time and the risk of transferring the patient is going to be justified by the benefit of getting these patients to the cath lab. What probably is the best way to go is that if your patient has a post-arrest STEMI, then you probably ought to try to transfer them just the way you would any other STEMI. If the patient is a post-arrest non-STEMI and therefore is lower risk for having a culprit lesion, probably the best thing to do is to work on resuscitating that patient while they're there with you. And then once they are somewhat stable, then you can work on transferring them. And I think it's an important point that this Journal of American College of Cardiology paper that we're talking about, and also the 2013 STEMI guidelines, the 2014 non-STEMI guidelines, they've all really pushed this concept of getting people to the cath lab as quickly as possible. But I hate to say this loud, but the reality is that there's also studies that say, you know what, there's no rush on these non-STEMI patients. Just stabilize them and get them for cath within the next 24 hours. So the American papers seem to really be pushing this hard to get them to cath right away. And intuitively, it seems like that would be beneficial. But if you don't have access to a cath, I don't know that rushing them is the right thing to do. And I think there's data that says that, just go ahead and get them over there within 24 hours. And that means that you should take your time to try to stabilize them as much as possible before sending for cath. So to summarize the answer to your question, what I would do if the person has a post-arrest STEMI, I would try to transfer them as quickly as possible. If the patient has a post-arrest non-ST elevation ACS on the 12 lead, I would stabilize them first before thinking about transfer.
Does this paper address lytics at all? We're talking about sending patients to cath lab if they have VFib, but they don't have a STEMI on EKG. Is that a patient you would potentially thrombolyze?
Question comes up in conferences all the time. This paper does not address that. The guidelines don't really address post-arrest use of lytics for this particular scenario. My opinion would be that if a patient has a post-arrest STEMI on 12-lead ECG and you don't have a cath lab available and you're not going to have a cath lab available in the near future, I would go ahead and lyse that patient. However, if the patient has a post-arrest non-ST elevation ACS, then of course you're not going to give thrombolytics to those patients.
What's the disposition of our comatose post-arrest patient with return of spontaneous circulation, ICU, or ICU via the cath lab. They're all going to get targeted temperature management and an EKG. STEMI, activate the STEMI team. No STEMI, still recommended to consult with interventional cardiology while sorting out whether or not the patient has any or possibly several of the 10 unfavorable resuscitation features. One of those, of course, being a non-V-fib rhythm. Of the three questions that Amal posed in the beginning,
one,
does the initial rhythm matter?
Two,
does the post-arrest EKG matter? In other words, STEMI versus non-STEMI.
Three,
does the mental status matter?
The third one, mental status, isn't really that important because even if your patient is completely obtunded, which many post-arrest patients are, they can still go to cath. And why do we care so much about who should go to the cath lab or not? Why can't they all go? Because if there's an acute coronary occlusion, we may have just done something good by getting a cardiac intervention. But if there's not,
when you send someone to the cath lab, there's not a team of critical care specialists or resuscitationists that are working on that patient. There are cardiologists up there that are trying specifically to open a vessel.
And the patient isn't going to get much benefit out of having dye squirted into their vessels while at the same time being distant from the ED or ICU, places where they're going to get much more attentive continuing resuscitation and post-arrest care.
Good boy, cath lab.